This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour three as we roll along. New time slot for us here at Wake Up Call. If you are new to the show, just hearing us for the first time, glad you can be with us. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, you won't be disappointed. We've been talking, of course, a lot about the national championship game tonight and, of course, the playoff picture in the NFL. So just to give you a recap a little bit here, just to kind of remind you, I know the news this weekend was sort of fast and furious because it happened on Friday and many people were in Friday mode, but the NFL owners did vote on Friday that the AFC championship game, should it include Kansas City and Buffalo, will be played at a neutral site. Everything else is the way it's supposed to be. But they also had this situation where there could have been a coin flip between Cincinnati and Baltimore had those two met in the playoffs like they are this weekend. But Cincinnati winning that game eliminates that coin flip possibility. But the one that is going to be in play is a neutral site AFC title game. I kind of went back and forth this weekend on whether or not I want that game outdoors or indoors. I know Robert on Facebook was telling me, oh, it's got to be indoors. I don't like weather. I don't know. I'm leaning towards it. I kind of want it outdoors, but if you have it outdoors, here's my thing. If you have it outdoors, I think it matters more if it's at one of the sites of the teams that are playing in it, right? If you are in Buffalo, for example, and you're getting Buffalo winds and Buffalo winter, yes, it's cold in Kansas City, but that weather plays into the hands of the Bills. If you're talking about the Packers, right, every time they've gone to Lambeau Field this time of year, it's always about the cold weather in Green Bay. It benefits the Packers. Well, it should have benefited the Packers. But that's kind of the reason why when we talk about weather, we talk about it being part of the advantage of the home team. That's one of the reasons why in the Super Bowl, when we had the Super Bowl in New York, we were a little nervous about a wintry weather. It's like when you get those kind of games on neutral sites, weather becomes a factor for both teams. And yeah, it's football weather, but there's no real, I guess, strategic advantage because weather, different parts of the country are different. A Kansas City cold is different than a wet winter cold, all those kind of things. But nevertheless, if you put it indoors, it's probably the fairest way to do it if you're talking about fair. Now, if you are the Buffalo Bills, that game against the Patriots was emotional. It was a game in which you had a lot of feelings for DeMar Hamlin. The threes were everywhere. The hearts and the threes were everywhere. You return the opening kickoff for a touchdown. You've got all of that emotion, just all of that pouring out. But be careful in the playoffs because you can ride emotion to a certain point, but as any good coach will tell you, that really only goes so far. In the end, you better not make mistakes. In the end, that sort of emotional drive can only take you to a point. You got to be prepared. The Patriots were, you know, if you're the Bills, you're not playing to have home field advantage through the playoffs. Kansas City had already established the one seed. But you are playing that game against New England, one, again, for DeMar Hamlin, all of that, but two, because you want the AFC title game to be on at a neutral site. If you had a choice between Arrowhead or a neutral site, you're taking the neutral site, right? So now because the Bills are the two seed and because of the records have the one discrepancy of the missed canceled game, you get that at a neutral site. That the Bills didn't quite dominate New England in that football game. There were some mistakes that Buffalo made that you're going to have to tighten up a little bit. It's good to have Josh Allen throwing three touchdowns, of course, and it's great that you had two special teams touchdowns, but you're not getting two special teams touchdowns in the playoffs. So be careful down the road. Now, they're going to be facing a Miami team that we'll see about the status of their quarterbacks, right? With Tua Tagovailoa and Teddy Bridgewater both out, Skylar Thompson, the rookie, just got enough field goal drives to beat the Jets in a game that they had to win. So I don't think Miami's going to cause a problem, but Cincinnati's playing really good right now. And if Lamar Jackson comes back for Baltimore, just be careful. Don't look ahead so much about the emotion of DeMar Hamlin, which we all are on board with. and we're all sort of pulling for that story to have a very good ending, full health for Damar Hamlin, and Buffalo, you know, having a good season if you have no dog in the fight. But be careful. Emotion isn't always going to take you to the finish line. Clean up some of the mistakes you made against the Patriots. For New England, this is the second time in 3 years that they have not made the playoffs, all with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. So we kind of expected that there would be a drop-off. There was a little bit of excitement about Mac Jones last year, but this is the second time in the three-year period that they're not going to the playoffs as they finish with an 8-9 record. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, Ron. If the Patriots did not make the playoffs, the Jacoby Myers to Chandler Jones pass was going to be remembered as this season, and that's exactly the way it should be. I worried that stupidity would have been overlooked if the Patriots indeed had made the playoffs. But the reality of it is, in a tie game, flattering the ball to Mac Jones that gets intercepted by Chandler Jones, who stumbles in for a touchdown, should be the main thought process as to why this team didn't make the playoffs. I have no guarantee if the Patriots would have won that game in overtime against the Raiders, but I know they didn't get to overtime because Jacoby Myers was dumb. What can I say?
Yeah.
You know, what can I say? So that's at least one thought on the Patriots season.
Now, the other thought that was going through my mind was that I feel, and I mean no disrespect to Dolphins and Ravens, but I feel it's like almost destiny for Bengals to play against the Bills.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I think that there is, yeah, I mean, we know that there's a big difference between your top teams. It's parity, but it's only so far, right?
I mean,
Kansas City, Buffalo, Cincinnati, they're not dealing with quarterback injuries where a rookie has to start. They're not, you know, they're not dealing with a team in the playoffs for the first time in a while, like Jacksonville. They're dealing with, you know, even Baltimore for that matter, dealing with quarterback issues. There is a space. I agree with you. I think those two are on a collision course for the divisional round to be playing against each other. Boy, did you see the picture of Joe Burrow in the locker room with that sunglasses and cigar? What are we doing here?
You mean from LSU?
Right, yeah. Yeah, like
when LSU won the national title, is that the picture you're talking about?
Is that his thing now? Is that
apparently
his thing? Like, he gave everybody in the Bengals cigars and that's his like victory
thing?
Well,
now he added the sunglasses, so that's
new. Well,
the
sunglasses is kind of new. I didn't see him wearing sunglasses when they beat Clemson in the national title game a few years ago.
He was just a college kid smoking in the locker room.
Why not? Why not? As the Bengals win 27-16, Anthony Brown was the quarterback for the Ravens.
Yeah.
Anthony Brown. Wow. Boy, poor Ravens, man.
Well, that's a new name.
Do we feel bad for Lamar Jackson, a guy who betted on himself? Do we feel bad for him, or is it just the way that's what happens?
Listen, I mean, you know, if the Ravens do win, then that the narrative switches immediately, doesn't it?
Right.
Right now we're saying, oh, man, you bet it on yourself, but you got injured, blah, 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 you know, doing all that. You weren't like Aaron Judge betting on himself. But if they find a way to beat the Bengals and it's Lamar Jackson that leads them all the way, that narrative changes immediately.
Well, so, which I kind of hope Lamar Jackson plays, right?
I hope he does, too. Want.
I hate when – What was the year the Raiders had a playoff game against, I think, Houston years ago? They were down to their third-string quarterback. Do you remember that years ago?
Yeah.
You remember, I can't remember
well,
the
we've had a couple
a
of those
situations. Game where it's like, holy cow, we're dusting off the media guide now in the playoffs to look up a guy we've never heard of who's starting a football game? Like, I don't – if it's Anthony Brown versus Joe Burrow again, part two, I'll be sad. No offense, Anthony Brown. I'm sure you had a fine career at Oregon or wherever you went.
Is that where?
I think yeah. Anthony Brown went to Oregon. Let me look it up. Can I look it up real quick?
Is it
my timeline? Is it my time now?
Lamar Jackson play because that's the Sunday nighter.
I got it popped up here. Yep, he went to Oregon. How in the world did I know that? I have no idea how I know that.
That's that brain cell.
Must have heard it and it stayed in my brain. Unlike pickup milk. See, pickup milk goes in and out of the ear. But Anthony Brown going to Oregon, if I heard that at some point, somewhere, somehow, then I go, oh, I remember that. I don't know how. I don't know. Just bizarre. Nevertheless, I hope Lamar Jackson plays. I don't care if it's 80%.
You know who else does? So does NBC, because they got the Sunday Nighter. They don't want Joe Burrow versus Anthony Brown.
And Buck and Aikman get the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game? Yeah. Is that their thing?
Really? How get the Monday night game? Is that?
How Cowboys great is that? Play?
There's a Monday night football game in the playoffs?
Well, Troy, Joe, he's just a good guy. That's a good play right there, Joe. That's a good play. Yep.
See, now that got set up perfectly, didn't it?
Yeah, it's
Cowboys
certainly
taking on the Buccaneers. You just kind of sit there and you just look at it like,
yeah.
Cowboys, that's your game to lose.
By the way, given how way Dak Prescott played yesterday, which was god-awful, I mean, now the Buccaneers have got to be the betting favorite, right? At home, Tom Brady, despite their not-so-good record.
Yeah.
They've got to be the betting favorite. I don't care what the line says. They've got to be like America's, we're not betting against Brady in the playoffs at home.
Yeah, Dallas is 3 points.
Three-point favorite? Yeah. I know the Cowboy fans everywhere will be putting money on Cowboys, but even you Cowboy fans have got to admit that was not fun.
And you Cowboy fans, this is the game that you're nervous about,
right?
Because all along, you just, I mean, it was just out there that, you know, this is the game against the Buccaneers that, you know, a 8-9 Buccaneers that you guys should go and wipe the floor with, but here they are hosting a game. And you just came off the worst performance of your career.
And Tom Brady putting up with garbage football on his offensive line and all that to get to a point where he's like, finally, playoffs. This is what I came back for. This is what I do. All that 17-game nonsense to get to this point. 8-9, 9-8, 10-7. I don't care what I was. Now I'm hosting a playoff game. Now I play the Dallas Cowboys. I beat them already this season. In week one, I'll beat him in week 19. That just happens to be where I want to be.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D. You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Yeah, it's really cool because you got a year under your belt now. You know, you really have a really good understanding of where the organization is, where you are as a group, and you really have a clear eye view of that, which I think is really outstanding. And then going in now this year for free agency and into the draft, I just think you're ahead. You know, you're just ahead that way. Yeah, I just found out about it, you know. So, you know, again, that's something we'll talk about in the future. I don't really have a reaction one way or the other right now, just that I'm focused on our guys and doing the exit interviews for tomorrow.
That being Matt Eberflus, the Chicago Bears, discussing what it's like to have the number one overall pick. 800-224-2004, at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. There is so much to get here today, but let's go ahead and break this down. For the first time since the 1947s, the Chicago Bears will be picking number one overall. Why is this important? Because the Bears understood the assignment. It was very easy. Two teams were vying for that number one pick. Two teams were coming into the matchup to be able to finally walk away, reset their franchise. One gets a win in the Houston Texans. They move now to number two. And the Bears, who lost in stellar fashion, 29-13 to the Minnesota
Vikings.
Continue.
It is Sports Map Radio. I'm Tony D. It's Wake Up Call. Ron Culver. Sorry for the technical difficulty. We are rolling along this morning talking NFL playoffs. But, of course, today is the day where we will expect to see some firings among head coaches that already started on Sunday. That was that kind of disrespectful to Lovie Smith to fire him on Sunday, right as soon as the game is over, within a few hours at the end of that game against the Colts? I mean, normally today is the day you go, hey, we've decided to move on from whoever it is. It seems a little insulting to say, yeah, we were just waiting until the sounded and then we're done and now
you're
fired.
I was wondering, what's the hurry?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's why it leads us to believe, did he do something wrong?
That's my question. Well, like, okay, take me back. I want Nick Caserio to explain who was going to turn this team into a playoff team if that's the normal reasoning, right? If the normal reasoning is I wanted advancement, who else was going to do that with this motley crew, right? Nobody. So when you hired Lovie Smith, did you believe at the time that you hired him that you were giving him the 3 to 4 years of rebuilding like the Lions were giving Dan Campbell, knowing what the circumstances were, where the expectations were, develop, we're going to find our new quarterback, we're going to find some pieces, and you're going to run it? Or was the idea of, yeah, if you don't win that game, we get the number one pick, and we kind of want the number one pick, so that'll help us out.
Yeah, but again,
I can't imagine that that's not a message you can give to the players on that team.
No, but I mean, the thing I think about too is because, I mean, Houston was all up in arms. Yeah, you gave away the number one pick.
Right.
It's like, well, there isn't a Trevor Lawrence coming out this year.
Right, exactly. People love Bryce Young.
Right. Right. But who's to think they can't get him at two?
Well, that was my problem. The Texans are probably nervous about who will get the one pick from the Bears. Who could offer the Bears just a tremendous amount of money where the Bears go, look, we don't need a quarterback. We like this guy. But this guy, we don't need to take him at number one. We could take him at 3 or 4. So those of you down below us who might be looking for another quarterback, true, give us a phone call. Because the guy we really want, we think we can get at 5, 6, 7, 4, whatever. That might be the case. Here's the thing. Now, okay, my wife worked for a company once in Denver, and they were closing the office in Denver, right? And they said they grabbed a certain group of people. My wife was one of them. They said, look, if you help us get from point A to point B, we're going to give you this amount of money and this severance package and all that stuff if you stay. So my wife went into work for like 2 months knowing that there was something on the other end, that there was an end to this, but she was going to get a nice payout and then she could find another job. The NFL doesn't work that way, right? You can't go to, and that, by the way, her circumstance happens in a lot of companies. You don't go to players in the National Football League and go, hey, could you lose a game for us so we can get guys to replace you? If you could just help us out, pursue our goals, obviously you won't be around for that. Because we're going to be drafting a quarterback, or down the road we'll get another guy on offensive line, or we're going to get another defensive player. If you guys wouldn't mind helping us out, that'll be great. But you could do that with coaches to an extent, because the coaching staff may think they're going to be sticking around for that, right? Players, there's no guarantee of anything. It's one of the reasons why their career expectancy is so short, because some of them, they're lucky to be on teams, and then when they get kicked off teams, there's no home for them. They're on practice squads or they're out of the business. Some find new homes. Some find new teams. Some may not find starter opportunities like they could with Houston. So nobody wants film of you missing tackles and dropping passes that are right at your chest or overthrowing a guy by 15 yards. If that's the reason that the Texans fired Lovie Smith, fine. Is there another reason? So we've gone the two extremes, right? One, what are they thinking from a team that went 3-13-1. What was the realistic expectation, and why didn't what did you think Lovie Smith was going to do? Then there's the other wild extreme of they wanted him to lose the game and he didn't lose the game. The answer is somewhere in the middle. Maybe, just maybe, they hired Lovie Smith with an idea of his philosophy would match their philosophy on how to grow the team, and they started finding out that he wasn't the guy. I think this is what hurt David Culley. David Culley, when he was hired, was not going to be the head coach of a good Houston Texans team that they were going to try to build. I think David Culley, when he was hired, was a stop measure until they could find the right guy when, over the next few years, they build the team up to what they want it to be. But I thought Lovie Smith was going to be that guy, a guy that had coached at Tampa Bay, Chicago, obviously, going to a Super Bowl, Illinois in college. I thought that that was the guy that they said, look, it's going to be a long haul, but if you're with us for this long haul, we will be getting picks. We will be building a team. You will be developing better players. You will be developing a better and better football team as the years progress. That's what I thought they hired him for after 1 year of David Culley. Because David Culley could have done 3-13-1 too, right? I mean, that was a terrible football team. You know, are the Bears going to fire Matt Eberflus because they got the number one pick in his first year? Probably not.
I hope not.
What a disrespectful thing to do.
I mean, honestly, at this point now, if you fire your first year head coach, I need to know. I need to have a definitive reason. Like Nathaniel Hackett being fired, I got it.
He didn't work out.
Urban Meyer last year getting fired, I get it.
But you know what? Those two guys, here's the thing. Those two guys, we all can laugh at Urban Meyer, but there were plenty of people who said, this is the right hire.
Right.
This is the right guy. Like somebody on Twitter was making fun of some media member that said Urban Meyer is going to do great things in Jacksonville. A lot of people, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback, right? It's easy to pick on predictions. I thought Urban Meyer would do good in the NFL. I don't know if he would do great in the NFL, but I didn't think he was. That's why it's so surprising. I didn't expect a dumpster fire 8 games into the season with reports of him. He didn't know players.
Right.
Like I had no idea Urban Meyer was that obtuse to the NFL that he didn't know who Aaron Donald was. Well, were you out of your mind?
That and then him sticking around to hang out in his restaurant.
Yeah. I never thought he was like a guy that would just disappear from the team and go visit his restaurant and mingle with the patrons while the team was flying back home after a loss.
But I look at the Texans like, all right, you had Lovie Smith this year. I thought that was a good hire. You had David Culley last year. That one we didn't think was a good hire. And you're turning into the Browns with all these different coaches.
right. All right, Jamie Plunkett is going to join us. He covers TCU for Frogs Today. We'll get the Horned Frogs side of the angle of tonight's championship game next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So as Ron and I were talking about earlier today, we were saying, hey, you know what? As TCU was winning games, and then you started to realize, oh, wait, hold on. Like, they're getting ranked enough to be in this picture. Again, a team that was picked to finish 7th in the Big 12 and wasn't ranked, and now all of a sudden you see the momentum that was building. Well, how long did this really last? Well, it's lasting into the final college football game when they take on Georgia tonight for the national title. Jimmy Plunkett joins us from Frogs Today, covers TCU on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, for a job you love, visit progressive.com/careers. How are you, Jamie? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, man, I'm doing great. It's National Championship Monday, and the Frogs are playing. Let's get it going. No,
this has just been nuts. Just from a standpoint of, talk a little bit about Sonny Dykes for a minute here. Like, talk about what he inherited, how he got this point where this team is on this unbelievable ride to the glory of tonight's national championship game.
You know, I think one of the biggest things that Sonny Dykes did when he got on campus last December in 2021 was he spent the first couple weeks of his career, first of all, filling out the rest of the 2022 signing class, because he got on the job about 3 weeks before that signing day period. And then over the Christmas break, he and his wife, Kate, spent the majority of their Christmas break visiting current TCU players in their home, getting to know them, getting to know their family, trying to build that really strong foundation for a good relationship to keep a lot of these guys on campus. Because as you know, it's really easy for a kid to get in the portal and get to another school now. And he understood that he had really good talent on the roster, and he didn't want to start off his tenure here by losing that. And so I think he did an incredible job of keeping most of these guys locked into TCU. And then he went out and he addressed some needs in the transfer portal. He got key players like Josh Newton, Alana Lee, Mark Perry, all of these guys that have contributed. Johnny Hodges is another big one that have contributed to this run. And I think one of the biggest things that he did, though, throughout this run to the national championship was he kind of vindicated a lot of TCU fans' feelings that there was talent on the roster, that it wasn't being used properly, and that there was potential for this team to be one of the better teams in the country year over year. Now, obviously, the question is, he's done it once. He might have a title under his belt after tonight, but can he sustain that moving forward? I think we're starting to see that already just by the fact that he signed a top 18 recruiting class for 2023. He had six transfer portals kids on official visits this week as he's preparing for a national championship. It looks like he's going to try and keep this thing pointed in the right direction.
I do want to ask you some questions about the game, but you just perked my interest with one of your questions. The departure of Gary Patterson, when we see something like that, where you have a guy that's he's the face of the school, the football team, for so long, gone through the teams in its transition from the Mountain West into the Big 12. He's such an icon, but they have to depart. What was the fan base like? You just talked about people saying, hey, there's talent here. But was there a feeling on the flip side that, oh, God, we're going to start all over again?
I don't know if it was a start all over again feeling, but there was a kind of what are we doing sentiment around TCU. Because, like you said, Gary's got a statue on campus. He is the person that built up this football program and thus one of the people that built up this university in the city of Fort Worth. And so when you start to realize that relationship is getting stale and TCU was starting to lag behind in some key areas like nutrition and human performance. There wasn't a very good progressive approach to the transfer portal or name, image, and likeness. And when you start to lag behind in those areas and you see your rivals picking up steam there, you realize that you have to have a conversation. And so Victor Bashini, the chancellor at TCU, Jeremiah Donati, the athletic director at TCU, started to have those conversations. And then the results stopped happening on the field as well, especially in 2021 when the Frogs ended up going 5-7. And so I give them nothing but props for having what had to be one of the hardest conversations of their lives to sit Gary Patterson down in that room and say, hey, I think we have to go in another direction. But they did it, and they did it well. And then even more importantly, they went out and they got a guy who is clearly capable of keeping things going in the direction that they want.
Kendra Miller is 50-50 for tonight. From a standpoint of knowing this team, knowing him, how do you take 50-50?
Well, his helmet is in Los Angeles. And so if his helmet is in L.A., I think Kendra is going to give it a run. MCLs are tricky, and he has obviously a very good potential NFL career to think about. Sonny Dykes mentioned as much in the coach's presser yesterday morning that they weren't only thinking about Monday when it came to Kendra and his knee, but they understand that he has the potential to have a really long, good NFL career, and they want to take that into account. So I would be shocked if Kendra Miller didn't step on the football field tonight. I would be shocked if he had the most snaps out of TCU running backs. But as we saw against Michigan in the Fiesta Bowl, Amari DiMercato is a very capable back in his own right.
Yeah, he got like 150 yards in replacing against the Wolverines. So that gives me to the question of like, okay, so he's obviously an NFL level talent, but is the running game going to suffer that much if DiMercato is in and what they want to do in trying to run the ball against a very stout Georgia defense anyway?
Well, I think that, Kendra Miller is Kendra Miller, right? And you're never going to fully replace him. But with Amari DiMercato, you have a capable back. You also have a couple other guys in the backfield, Amani Bailey and Trent Battle, who have done some really good things from the running back position as well. But you also, when you're talking about TCU's running game, you can't discount Max Duggan and what he's able to do with his legs as well. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if we saw Max with a lot of designed runs, a lot of QB power stuff early, trying to get some of that established, get him hit once or twice so he gets into a good rhythm, and see if he can't create some opportunities with his legs as well.
We saw there was some, we were talking about this earlier last hour about Georgia, and we said, look, against Michigan, TCU felt like they put Michigan in some uncomfortable positions where Michigan made some decisions based on where the game was heading. Is there a possibility of doing that again, of marrying some of that where it was 14-0 against Michigan and Michigan decided to do some things? Do you think that could work against Georgia? They're a little bit more experienced on this setting.
Yeah, I don't think it would work to the same extent, but I do think that TCU is capable of getting Georgia out of their game script, and that's critically important against
Absolutely.
A team like the Bulldogs, who you said have such good experience. Obviously, they just won this national title last year. They're undefeated this year, even though they have had those moments. You know, you look at the Kentucky game, and the Missouri game, the only other two times this year, by the way, that they've had to travel out of the Eastern time zone. Those were the two lowest point outputs here. But you've seen them struggle at times. They struggled against Ohio State for about three quarters before they finally turned on it and came back in that game as well. There are opportunities based on what other teams have done for TCU to get Georgia out of their game script, make them a little bit uncomfortable, and maybe, just maybe, Kirby Smart will start calling some things that he's not normally calling, and that would work in TCU's favor for sure.
What has worked for Max Duggan this year? What made him a Heisman Trophy finalist? There's statistics, and then there's that intangible thing. What's that intangible thing?
I think the intangible thing, frankly, is the fact that he doesn't like or want the spotlight. He just wants to play football, you know, and he wants to play football with every ounce of his being. We know that because he went through a 9-hour heart surgery just so he could get back on the field again.
Oh.
He wants to play football for his teammates. He wants to play football for TCU. And he is willing and able to put his body on the line every single play to make big plays for his teammates and will TCU to a victory. We saw it all year long. We saw the efforts that he put into the Big 12 championship, even though the Frogs fell short. We saw his efforts again on Saturday night in the Fiesta Bowl, even though that wasn't his best performance with two interceptions. And we will absolutely see it again on Monday night. Max is a leader. Guys respond to the way that he's willing to get hit and give hits. And they're going to play their hearts out for him as well.
We've got a minute, but I want to talk about the thing that people are noticing about Georgia in the last two games, that they gave up a lot of yards through the air. And TCU has not only got Max Duggan, they've got some good receivers as well. Do you think that's a game factor in this tonight? Can they exploit what Georgia has been giving up against Ohio State and LSU?
Yeah, I absolutely think they can. You know, and I don't know if we talked about it here before the Michigan game or if I talked about it somewhere else, but Michigan folks didn't believe me when I told them that TCU had more team speed at the skill positions than Ohio State. And that's true. We saw it bear out against Michigan. And we're going to see TCU try and take advantage of that tonight. Will it work out the same way? I don't know, because obviously Georgia's got some athletes on the defensive side of the ball that TCU has to be concerned about. And if Max doesn't have time to get his skill position players the ball, then that's all for naught. But when you talk about Quentin Johnston, Tay Barber, Darius Davis, that's elite team speed at the wide receiver position. And there's no doubt that those guys are going to come ready to make big plays.
Absolutely. Jamie, really good stuff. Thank you for joining us both times as we watch this team progress to where we are tonight in the national championship game. Thank you. Enjoy the game tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Again, Jamie Plunkett. Again, Frogs Today covers TCU, Progressive guest line. Looking for a career path with flexibility and great pay and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers. All right, as we continue along, our thoughts on this is simple. I think tonight it is easy to sort of say, okay, this is two really good teams that have earned their spot. Remember, if you don't have to be that old to remember that the national championship game before the playoff was a collision course almost between two teams that you could sort of see coming together from a mile away, right? I mean, it may not result because sometimes we'd have like chaos in the last week of the season, but you would see, for example, like a Miami team and like they're going to be number one. And then you sort of see like, and they could play in Nebraska. They could play, you could get a real feel for it. We've really had just a little over a week to digest this matchup. And to be honest, a matchup a lot of us didn't really think about, given the strength of Michigan going into the Fiesta Bowl. That being said, if TCU keeps this mano a mano, they're right. They've got a chance to capitalize on a mistake or two. My worry is, can they keep it mano a mano? That's going to be the tonight.
Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Thanks to Jamie Plunkett, Frogs Today. Good stuff. It's really, let me tell you something about this. This is a funny thing tonight.
Look, if you're a college program, go get the big time quarterback. I believe me, go get the Arch Manning if you can get the Arch Manning, right? Go get the five star kid. But isn't it amazing that tonight we've got two quarterbacks that had to kind of fight their way and kind of go through obstacles to get to the point where they were Heisman finalists and leading their team in the national championship? I mean, Stetson Bennett's story
he still has no respect.
Exactly. Like, people are waiting to boo the hell out of him. Like, they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop from the ball. And Max Duggan, he's been at TCU for a while, but he wasn't even the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year. He kind of had to get that job and then keep that job. So we are not seeing two guys that are in this position the traditional Trevor Lawrence kind of way, right? But you can also make the case about Joe Burrow. When Joe Burrow won the national championship, he wasn't this can't miss, land at a place, you're going to win multiple national. He had to go from Ohio State, flame out there, go to LSU, win a title, right? That's that, you know, I remember talking about Joe Burrow and making the comparison to Robert Johnson, the Blues players. Like, he went to the crossroads, made a deal with the devil, and became the best Blues player of all time. Joe Burrow, somewhere along the line, found his crossroads, can't play at Ohio State, but won a national championship and a Heisman Trophy in one of the most historic seasons college football history. Sometimes these stories just come out of nowhere, and they're really great, and they're an important part. So like I said, if you're a recruit, you obviously can't find and predict that. So go get the five-star kid, but you don't have to get the five-star kid, because sometimes you may find the kid that's the walk-on, that's struggling to keep a starting job or get a starting job, and then when you give it to him, says, that's it, I've got it, it's mine forever. You have to find sort of these intangibles. That's why I asked both of the guys these questions. What is it about them? Because we really wouldn't be saying about Trevor Lawrence. Like, I couldn't ask a Clemson guy a few years ago, well, what's the it factor? Because you know what he would tell me? Everything that makes a great starting quarterback. He's big, he's got a good arm, he's got a good head, he can run, he's got strength. Starting Trevor Lawrence and winning national championships is the no-brainer. How does Stetson Bennett go from walk-on, can't play at Georgia, now he can play at Georgia's, going the JUCO route, to becoming the most important individual in the state if he wins tonight? You think Herschel Walker, outside of his election run, Herschel Walker was a major Georgia celebrity? Stetson Bennett, back-to-back national championships in that state that's bulldog crazy? Forget it. He's already got that with this one, with the one he got last year. But to put Georgia on that extra elite level, I mean, I live in Tennessee. They revere Peyton Manning. He never won them a national title, as we know from the outrage when ESPN said he did. Right? But Peyton Manning, he's a legendary god, but no national title. Stetson Bennett could win two titles for a school and put this school in elite company just by winning tonight against TCU. Now, Max Duggan, same kind of story. TCU has no business being in this game based on the way us experts predicted, right? We are basing our entire feeling on TCU's run because media members didn't like them, but they did go 5-7 the prior year. They didn't give you any reason to pick them 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 in the conference. Sure, there was, you know, some talent, as Jamie pointed out. But they fired Gary Patterson. Now, we know how this works, right? When you fire a head coach and you have to get another head coach, nobody wants to be that guy. And Sonny Dykes was that guy, right? So he goes there. And where are we now? He's 60 minutes away from giving that school their first title since the late 30s. How did you win a national title in the 30s? You know how you won a national title in the 30s? People just told you you did.
Yep.
That's basically how it worked.
Some newspaper said, right? No, they're national champions. And got another newspaper to come along, and that's how it happened.
And as I've said for many years, it was, if you go back in time, you would hear coaches talking about, the bowl game their conference was attached to. That was it. Right? And then if you were lucky enough to be one of the teams at the end of the season that went unbeaten or one loss and was good, and people told you you were the national champion, you won the national champion. But they were more likely to celebrate the thing they could control. And what they could control was winning the Sugar Bowl or the Cotton Bowl or the Rose Bowl or the Orange Bowl or whatever it is that they were attached to. Right. Once they were able to do that, once you're able to do that, you let everything else fall the way it falls, but you celebrate what you can control on the field. That's how TCU won its last national championship. And prior to last year, that's how Georgia won its last championship in 1980. Same kind of deal. But as I was saying, one of the things about this playoff, when it starts to expand and it becomes like every other playoff where the immediacy of the matchup starts allowing us to sort of dissect it in a quicker way, you are losing a little bit of sort of this trajectory of two giant teams that sort of reach to the pinnacle at the same time. I think the thing about tonight's game is there are a lot of people out there that wish it was Georgia-Michigan, right? That TCU still hasn't been the team that makes you go, that's one of the two. This is a matchup of the two best teams in college football. No, this is a matchup between two teams that have gone through the playoff. One of them happens to be the number one team in the country and the defending national champs. And the other one is this amazing feel-good story that has played awesome football this season. Right?
Real quick, I have a question for you because I saw this and I thought this was actually a good question.
Okay.
Right? What's more unfathomable or what harder to believe? Actually, it was more impressive. What's more impressive? You ready?
Yep.
Winning back-to-back or TCU winning it all? I actually looked at it. I was going to go TCU winning it all, but then it's like back-to-back in this day and age is tough.
Really hard. Really hard. Like I was asking earlier, look, has Georgia always had a little target on its back for being Georgia? Sure.
Yeah.
But when they're the national champion, Georgia, that's a bigger target. And you have to take everybody's best shot, right? Everybody's best shot.
Listen, I know what everyone's pick was for the national title. I think everyone secretly was hoping, outside of Georgia and TCU, I think everyone was hoping for a Michigan-Ohio State national title.
Sure, part two, just to see if the first game was more fluky because Ohio State didn't play all that well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rivalry leading up to a championship appearance. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, Georgia-TCU. Yeah, if it was Georgia-Michigan, you're talking about two blue blood programs, whatnot.
Right.
But look, if you're not on what TCU – look, if TCU was a 12 seed in a 12-team playoff like we're going to get down the road and they made it to the championship game, you would be saying, caught a few breaks, played really well. If you are really sitting back going, TCU – you didn't watch them this year. They were in close games, beat good football teams. The Big 12 was no joke. And the one thing I will say about Sonny Dykes, and this is not to say that the SEC, I think, is failing at schools by scheduling a Georgia Christian State, right? Every now and then, the SEC has to schedule those games because their conference is so hard. But Sonny Dykes pointed that out, too, because we didn't do that late. We didn't have a cupcake game late in our schedule. Like, we played our conference game all the way through to the end, and there was a break where schools in the SEC were playing, the penultimate game of the regular season usually is a team that is like, finally we'll play Chattanooga, and then we'll play the Iron Bowl next week, or we'll play, the Palmetto Bowl next week, or we'll play the Egg Bowl next week. And for a lot of schools, they did do that. Now, Georgia played Georgia Tech at the end of the season because that's their traditional rivalry. Some years, Georgia, back in the old days when they ran that option offense, was a pain in the tush to prepare for in a week, and they'd bite you a little bit. Other times, you beat them 63-0, and then you take a nap. And I think that, Georgia did that at the end of their season. But their path through LSU, Ohio State, and now here is certainly, certainly impressive. But what TCU has done to get in, first of all, that's it.